Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a lot of diversity on the show. We talked to Tulsi Gabbard, the former Democratic congresswoman who is now being considered as a running mate by Donald Trump, or at least wants to be considered as a running mate by Donald Trump. We also talked with Jane Fonda and Arnold Schwarzenegger about their work together on the environment. And later, Josh Friday, California's chief service officer, about how you can get involved in service programs in the state. But let's start with Tulsi Gabbard. She was last on our show in 2019 when she was running for president as a Democrat. A lot has changed since then. She came to Los Angeles this week to speak to the Los Angeles Republican Club. Here is our full unedited interview with Tulsi Gabbard. With us this week on set, it's great to have Tulsi Gabbard here. Of course, she is a four-term Democratic congressperson from Hawaii, a combat veteran currently serving as a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army Reserve. In 2019, she visited us on set while she was running for the Democratic nomination for president. Now she's here to talk about her new book, available for pre-order now. It's called For Love of Country, Leave the Democrat Party Behind. She's here in L.A. for a weekend speech to the Los Angeles GOP featuring our pal Steve Hilton. Tulsi Gabbard, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Good to be back. It's been a minute since I saw you.
Just a few things have changed in your worldview since then.
The world has changed.
Yes.
The politics in our country has changed dramatically, I would say, since I saw you probably last in early 2020 or late 2019,
I think. Yep. So, well, let's talk about that. So the book, which we see right here, is called For Love of Country, Leave the Democrat Party Behind. Why did you become a Democrat in the first place?
Yes.
And why the decision to leave it behind?
I was 21 years old in Hawaii, thinking about how I could best serve my community. I was very motivated by a desire to protect our home. Hawaii is a beautiful place, and grew up surfing and hiking, and protecting our environment was something and remains something I'm very passionate about. And as I went to go, I said, hey, why don't I run for the state legislature and actually be in a position where I could do something, actually solve problems rather than stand on the outside carrying a sign and talking about it. Went and pulled the Office of Election paperwork and saw that I had to choose a party. And unlike some people, I didn't come from a family where it's like, okay, we're generation-long Democrats or generations-long Republicans. And so I really thought through, well, what actually makes sense for me? Mm-hmm. And at that time, this is obviously over 20 years ago, especially in Hawaii, the Democratic Party has had a legacy of being the party of working people, being a welcoming big tent party that really sincerely brought people together with different ideas, different views on different things, different religions, different backgrounds, and stood for free speech, stood for civil liberties, stood for these fundamental, truly American principles. And that's what drew me to the Democratic Party and why I joined the Democratic Party. Over these past 20 years, but I would say in a very fast fashion over these last several years, unfortunately, those in charge of the Democratic Party have taken it away from the traditional, what people call the traditional liberal party of JFK and the party of Martin Luther King, and it has become thoroughly unrecognizable today. Mm. And we can get into some of the reasons why I decided in late 2022 to leave the Democratic Party. It really came about after doing my best as a Democrat in Congress for 8 years, as a vice chair of the Democratic National Committee, as a candidate for president in the Democratic primary in 2020, to try to bring about that change that would take us back to the Democrat roots of being the party of the people. I became increasingly frustrated with the fact that those in power in Washington and the Democratic Party rejected that idea, rejected that effort that I was waging, but that others were waging as well, and instead continued down this path to where we see them today, where the Democratic Party is in Washington especially, is a party of the elite. They are a party that is actively trying to censor free speech. When there are people who are saying things that they don't like, challenging their authority, asking questions they don't want asked, either directly or indirectly through big tech, we've seen increasingly more and more evidence showing that in the name of disinformation or misinformation or hate speech or offensive speech, unfortunately, the Democrat Party has become one saying, well, free speech is not absolute. And if we deem your speech to be offensive, then you shouldn't be allowed to speak in this country. Or if you say things that we don't think are factual, you shouldn't be allowed to say those things. This is one of many examples, unfortunately, of how the Democrat elite in Washington have not only strayed so far away from our rights and freedoms enshrined in the Constitution and Bill of Rights, but are dangerously using their position of power, abusing their position of power to undermine those fundamental rights and freedoms. And for me, both as an American, as someone who's proudly served our country as a soldier for over 20 years in the Army Reserve, that's a huge problem, to put it lightly.
So you've gotten a lot of attention recently because you've said that if Donald Trump asked you to be vice president, you would serve, right?
I would.
How is that going? Are you in communications for that? Or is he vetting you for that?
I honestly don't have any insight into the inner workings of their campaign. I hear a lot of chatter, but frankly, I'm really very focused on what I'm doing, which is spending my time sounding the alarm bells across the country, speaking to different groups and people and on as many platforms as possible, really to reveal the truth or to remind people or show them what is happening in our country, how even as you may be of one party or another, you may have certain views on this issue or that issue. And this is what I get into in my book at a fundamental way. What we as Americans should stand for and what we must be able to come together around are the protection and defense of those fundamental rights and freedoms.
So, have you talked to him specifically about this idea of being VP?
I have met and talked to him before, but no, I have not. Not on this topic.
Okay. There's somebody else who some people have tied you to, which is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He's going to be announcing his VP pick on Tuesday. Is there any chance you're there for that?
I will be visiting the border on Tuesday. One of the many serious problems and issues that we're facing, specifically the border here in California, an issue that unfortunately is not getting enough attention. A lot of times in the national cable news, they focus on what's going on in Texas, focus on what's going on in places like Arizona and others, which is important. But I think one of the things, and you know this, probably better than most, is one of the things that's different about the border here in California is just how much smaller it is than the border in Texas. But really the result of that is people who come in across the border here illegally are able to disappear into a neighborhood within minutes, making it very difficult for us as Americans to know who's coming across our border, where are they going, and how do you apprehend them?
We've seen a big influx at the California side of the border. So, okay, it's fair to say, based off of that, you're not going to be RFK Jr.'s vice president.
We'll see what he announces.
There are a lot of Democrats who feel like, okay, we're frustrated with the party, but then they look at January 6th and Donald Trump, and they feel like he continues to lie about an election that he lost. And they look at the criminal indictments against him for basically trying to overturn the election or mishandling classified intelligence. Does that worry you at all? Are you concerned about any of that?
What I see is when I talk about this abuse of power by the Democrat elite, and I've talked about this extensively, is part of what we should be, as Americans, alarmed about. What are we at? 92, 97 felony counts. I've lost track of exactly how many there are between the federal government and different state governments. We're seeing a politicization of our Department of Justice and law enforcement in different levels in a way that's never actually been seen before in our country, where the party and president in power is directly going after and targeting the candidate that poses the greatest threat to their power and the greatest threat to their re-election.
But you're not worried at all about the merits of why those indictments
I'm not going to go into there's so many different allegations and accusations that are going to, but, this thing in New York, the real estate one, for example, I mean, it from the very beginning, the political bias and targeting coming from people who have run their whole campaigns on going out and getting Donald Trump and then finding a way or creating a way for them to do it. Again, these are things that are being done in an unprecedented way. What I think voters really need to focus on, and they can make their minds up for themselves about all of these different issues, is when we look at the danger of what the Democratic Party in power are doing and the lengths they are willing to go to try to destroy their major political opponent, and the fact that even as some of these lawsuits are not going in the direction that they had hoped they would, or the courts are not ruling in the way that the Democrats had hoped they would, you have powerful people in the Democratic Party saying basically, aw, shucks, I guess we're going to have to rely on the American people and voters to quote unquote save our democracy. The whole premise there, regardless of your opinion on each of these different cases, reveals that mindset that is incredibly dangerous to me, which is they're trying to work through all of these other channels, bypassing the American people, bypassing voters to decide who should win the election. And that to me, when they talk about saving our democracy, which is so many of these things are being done. Well, we've got to save our democracy because President Trump is going to destroy it. He'll be a dictator. All these different things that they're saying, the way that they are doing this, instead of just trusting the American people to exercise their own discernment, look at all these lawsuits. Look at the charges that are being that are being levied. Compare and contrast President Biden's record versus President Trump's record. Trust our democracy to work as our founders intended, and let voters make the decision about what kind of future we want for our country. And that is the most important thing that voters need to focus on.
And for you, that choice is Trump over Biden.
I'm traveling across the country telling people, put our country, our democracy, and our freedom first, and make that decision for yourselves.
And for you, that's Trump.
For me, this is not allowing the Democrats to continue to abuse their power, period.
I want to show people you, the military version of you. Here is some of that.
Good morning from beautiful Fort Carson, Colorado.
My soldiers. You, of course, an Army reservist. You continue to serve. Can you talk to us, as we talk to Tulsi Gabbard, about what you see real concisely as America's role in the world right now?
We have the opportunity to be that beacon and example of freedom and democracy that for a long time many countries have seen us as. But the things that we're talking about here, about how undemocratic, with a small d, our country is becoming because of abuse of power, we are undermining our opportunity to serve as that example, and that's where we've got to focus on getting our own house in order. From a military standpoint, from a foreign policy standpoint, as a country, are successful when we are able to be prosperous and live in peace and free and secure. There are ways to do that where we can build relationships with other countries, be able to work out our differences with those who have adversarial interests, but pursue that peace and prosperity by engaging with other countries in a way that doesn't resort to the first option being economic warfare through sanctions and the dropping of bombs. We should not be the policemen of the world. War is sometimes, unfortunately, necessary. I've deployed to three different war zones over the time that I've served in uniform, and served in a medical unit during my first deployment to Iraq, where I've seen and experienced firsthand the heavy, heavy cost of war. It is unfortunately taken too lightly by politicians from both parties in Washington. War must be seen as a last resort. After all, diplomatic means are exhausted and should not be taken lightly. The lives of my brothers and sisters should not be taken lightly, and the sacrifices that they and their families make.
Real quickly, two quick things that are fun to wrap things up. I know you're a big workout person.
I try.
It's amazing to see some of the videos of you doing CrossFit, including here. How do you think the country should think about exercise and physical fitness differently? Because we do have a chronic disease problem, and we've got an obesity problem in this country.
And this is such a great topic. I hope we can have another longer conversation about this, because it's something I'm really passionate about. You know, we talk about our healthcare system and healthcare reform and all of these different things, but really, when you look at it, our system is set up around prescribing drugs to treat a symptom rather than actually going to the cause and encouraging people just to try to live a healthier lifestyle. It means thinking about what kind of food you're eating, drinking water, getting some exercise. And that may mean for some people, hey, go for a 30-minute walk every day. For other people, it might mean going to a CrossFit gym or whatever it is in between. The main thing is really thinking about how we as a people can be healthier. Life is short, and we want to be able to spend our time with those that we love and in good health.
And that includes spending time with family. And
yes.
So we always like to end things with music here. So we're going to end with your music. This is you and your parents singing Amazing Grace.
Oh, wow.
Which is really great. Tulsi Gabbard, thanks for being here. Must have been very special.
It was right around Christmas last year.
Great.
Our thanks to Tulsi Gabbard. Now, something very different. We went out to a rally this week where Governor Gavin Newsom, former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, actress, activist Jane Fonda came together with other local leaders to fight to keep SB 1137. This is a bill that Governor Newsom signed about a year ago, that would keep new oil drilling 3,200 feet from schools and homes and hospitals. The oil companies have fought it. There's been a stay in court. And it's going to be up to California voters in the fall whether to go forward with this or not. So they are arguing to keep it. So grabbed Jane Fonda for a real quick interview. And while that was happening, she grabbed Arnold Schwarzenegger. So here are Jane Fonda and, in a moment, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Governor, what's the bottom line message to California voters on this?
I mean, I just don't be fooled by the misinformation and disinformation coming from the oil companies. They've been playing us for fools for decades and decades.
This week, a rare double governor appearance. Newsom and Schwarzenegger teaming up to protect California's SB 1137, along with actress Jane Fonda. That law, signed by Newsom, would maintain a 3,200-foot buffer zone between neighborhoods and new oil wells. We caught up with Jane Fonda and, later, Schwarzenegger.
Why was it so important for you to be out here? What's your main message?
The message is that 2 years ago, Governor Newsom, Gavin Newsom, signed a bill, Senate Bill 1137, that created the largest setback in the country. That means no oil wells within 3,200 feet. The oil wells that are already there, clean them up, less pollution, help the people. Historic. And then the oil companies are trying to overturn it. Mm. And we're fighting to keep the law. And that's why we're here. And that's why it's so important that we have Arnold Schwarzenegger, a Republican governor, standing next to, and there he is. Come here. I am so proud to stand next to this man.
But you see how she bosses me around? That was always like
that.
I know.
I've always been able to boss him around.
Ever since I came to this country, Jane Fonda has been bossing me around.
I know. I love it.
I mean, can
I
you believe
it.
That?
It's because like, you love to be bossed around.
Why not? I mean, especially the smart women.
I mean, yeah, exactly. When she calls, you have to come, right?
That's like in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
2 seconds. But anyway, the important thing here is what most people don't know and what you don't know yet, because I never told you that we don't only have this in common and the movie business in common, but the fitness explosion in the 70s has happened because she came in and started creating these fitness videos and had a show and inspired the women. See, I was always trying to inspire the men, but there's only half of the population. And all of a sudden, those two things together, one and one became three. Mm. It was a huge explosion, and that's what started the whole fitness you know, phenomenon in the 70s and 80s.
So why are you here now?
No, I'm just say this is one thing we have in common. But the other thing is, of course, the environment. We have been fighting for a clean environment, and I think today is basically to just say to the oil companies, look, we don't want you to stop drilling because we need oil, but we want you to drill safely. And you got to go and consider people's health. We know that through pollution, 7 million people die every year worldwide. So, I mean, that's a lot of people. So we can do better than that, and they can do much better than that. And so, of course, the lawmakers in California and the governor, I mean, they have put together this great law that says, you know, you cannot drill within 3,200 feet of a housing project or a hospital or a park or a school. And they want to undo that law with a proposition that would be on a ballot. But of course, this is kind of like a sequel. Because we have gone through this once before.
You've done
in
it.
In 2010,
right.
They tried to put an initiative together that says, let's undo all the environmental laws in California. And we beat them badly. It was 62 to 38. So, I mean, this is going to be a repeat. It's literally a sequel. The sad story is that, you know, Einstein said that if you do the same thing over and over again and expect different results, that's the definition of insanity. And so I don't know why they're trying to do the same playbook again.
Yeah.
I mean, it works in Washington for them and worldwide,
sure.
But it never works in California,
yeah.
Especially when we have, you know, the governor, Jane Fonda,
Arnold Schwarzenegger,
and so many community leaders and public servants come together. We have a great team together, and we're going to beat them again.
And you're going to win, right?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to, okay. Yes.
We're going to do everything in our power.
Thank you very much for the time. It's great to see you, Governor.
Pete, by the way, he's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, he's cute, too.
No, but he always... excuse me. I mean, what am I, chopped liver all of a sudden?
Our thanks to that. That's very sweet. I appreciate that. What a life moment that is, being called cute by Jane Fonda. Now, to somebody else who has become a friend of ours over the last few years. His name is Josh Friday. He's California's chief service officer. He runs the California Service Corps. We've profiled them many times in the past, but it's his first time visiting us at our Issue Is studio. And we get to hear even more from him. Here's that conversation.
It's changed my life. Like, it's been a whole 360.
Teresa, one of so many whose lives have been changed by participating in California's Service Corps programs. Now they're looking for new applicants. Joining us in studio to talk about it for the first time is Josh Friday, California's Chief Service Officer. We've talked so many times. We've never been in the house, so it's good to have you here. Welcome to The Issue Is.
I feel like I'm home. Thank you, Alex.
So what's the big announcement?
The big announcement is that California is now recruiting over 10,000 paid positions with the California Service Corps, which is, as we've talked about, an effort that Governor Newsom launched to really unite and empower Californians through service.
Talk to us about what you have been seeing and what are the different service opportunities.
Yeah, we think we've really built something special here in California. Governor Newsom has invested in creating opportunities for people not just to have jobs, but to pay for school by serving in their community. And what we're seeing now that we have over 10,000 positions across the state of California is that it's having an impact on individuals. We're creating real economic opportunity to help pay for school and get a job. But we're also seeing the impact on the community. These 10,000 service members over the coming year are going to serve nearly 5 million hours in our food banks, tutoring and mentoring our low-income students, taking climate action. So it's real meaningful work, and we're also preparing the next generation of California's workforce, our teachers, our nurses, our tradespeople. So we're seeing impact across the board.
And so people can serve in a variety of ways, right? There's a climate corps, which is focused on that. There's a service corps. There's a college corps that is focused on that. And now an AmeriCorps, too, on bigger service projects. And this has become a national model. When President Biden came out and visited California, he walked with one of your fellows, along with Governor Newsom, talking about this process, and they've now done AmeriCorps as a national thing. We also have some video of Wes Moore, the governor of Maryland. He made this a model in
Maryland, where they're now doing their own service corps.
We also seen recently the governor of New York announced the creation of the Empire State Corps, modeled after the California College Corps model. And I think what it demonstrates is that Americans are hungry. They're hungry to be asked to be part of their community, to be able to contribute, to give back. And they're also tired of our divisive politics. They're tired of the polarization, and they want to do something positive on issues like climate change. So we're very encouraged by what we're seeing, and it's exciting that the model's here in California.
Okay, so if I'm watching this and I want to do this, or I think, you know, my kid would be a great person to do this, what do they do?
What they do first is go to caservicecorps.com, our website. What we've done with the California Service Corps is create a model for almost anyone to serve. Young and old, no matter what background you have or experience, we need you. So go to our website, sign up, apply, and start getting paid to make a difference today.
We need to get to know a little bit more about you.
Okay.
So on The Issue Is, we do this 30-second game called Personal Issues, where we learn some of your personal favorites. And so rapid fire, first thing that comes to mind. What is your favorite TV show?
My favorite TV show, West Wing.
Oh, great answer. Mine too. Favorite book?
Favorite book, Hatchet.
Favorite sports team?
San Francisco Giants, of course.
All right, good luck with that. Favorite musical artist or band?
I'm going to go with Metallica.
Who is your role model?
My role model is my parents, my mom and my dad, and then also, of course, Sergeant Shriver.
And what is the best way to relax?
The best way to relax is go on a very, very long run.
And when you say long run, I mean, there's some people that think long run, we're talking about a few miles. How long are we talking?
Probably 40 to 50 miles is the long run range these days.
I mean, you're an ultra marathoner, right? So that's not just like the regular 26. You're like, let's do twice that.
Like I said, it's a good way to get out there under the sun and relax.
How long does that take?
It's a full day. I'm not a fast runner, so it's a full day.
Wow.
10 hours.
Okay. Well, if you can get through that, I guess you can get through the service projects.
That's true.
Right?
Exactly.
And all that
and we're going to sign up more ultra runners. But yeah. First, we need you to sign up to serve.
Our thanks to Josh Friday and to Jane Fonda and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Tulsi Gabbard. I don't think anybody else has given you that lineup this week. We'll be back next week. Be interesting to see what happens next in politics, including who will be Robert F. Kennedy's VP. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.